Last week we talked about humor. This week we're talking about the power of stories. We talk about the stories that are being told all around us every day in various forms of media, but then we take a turn and talk about the stories we tell. Not only are humans story-hungry beings, we are living stories. Unfortunately, as we have seen technology advance, the art of storytelling has diminished. But do we as men have a responsibility to tell stories? In this episode, I'm joined by my cousin and friend, Brian Dorsey, as we talk about the power of stories. You're listening to the Man They Remember podcast, where we're encouraging men to be the kind of man people will remember when we're gone. We're tearing down the Macho Man stereotype one episode at a time. Go to mantheyremember.com for more information. Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of the Man They Remember podcast, encouraging men to be the kind of man people will remember when you're gone. And I got a treat for you today. I'm here with my, I guess, cousin-in-law. Is that what we would say?
That's how I would define it, yeah. Cousin-in-law. But we're cousins.
Cousin-in-law.
I don't like the in-law piece because it just makes it seem so forced.
Right. So, like, Brian.
Would you have me as your cousin if I wasn't your in-law?
Would I? Of course.
Well, there you go.
So, like,
I'll call
cousin.
You cousin-in-law, but you can call me cousin.
Just give you a little more gain.
There we go.
Yeah. But, Brian.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing well. It's beautiful to be out here with you and your family. This is just a gorgeous place. And
yeah, we're out at the
homestead.
Man, they remember North Campus of the podcast studios.
Oh man.
Back when we did my worship podcast, we would say, because we'd record either in my office, usually in my office or his office. Mm-hmm. So we were either at the East or the West Worship Ministry Catalyst studio because we wanted to sound like, you know, we had a studio and we were cool because that's what, you know, Studio A or, you know, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. So, yeah, so this is the Studio North. So yeah, we're really cool, but we're actually in my garage, but
Studio G.
Yeah, that's probably a little too nice of a rating. It's more like Studio M or N or Q or something. It's not horrible out here.
No, it's so spacious.
It is. It's the most insulated room in our house.
And garages normally are, because you've got to have those doors, fire doors, so that sort of insulates everything.
But there's other rooms in our house that have no insulation, but the garage is really well insulated. So I can keep this whole thing warm with this little space here and all winter long. Yeah.
Well, you've done well. I love it. The setup is phenomenal. And it's totally primed and ready for prime time here with the mics and everything. I like it.
And
like,
we have good internet now, so we could actually stream from here if we wanted to.
It won't be.
It probably still will be. That's how it always goes. Even if I've got a good upload, it always breaks up. Somehow I find a way to make it not work. I say it's Steve Jobs' ghost lives in my computer because I know it's like Steve Jobs knows that I don't like Macs.
Oh,
they're okay. They're decent computers for the most part, but they crash just as often as a PC does, you know, but I'm pretty sure he lives in my computer and he just messes with stuff just because he knows that I don't like it and I'm trashing his, you know, good reputation out there in the world.
That's that Apple fake news that gets out there. I'm like you. I had Macs when they were first introduced and I was in school and had to use them. I just thought they just weren't as polished as the Windows. They just seemed so, you know, basic. And the user interface to me wasn't as robust. And then they started copying Windows with more color and brightness and more personality, basically. And then they got really good. But I still don't like how the format is with all of the little icons at the bottom.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
And then you can't change much of anything. And,
yeah, because they're control freaks there. They don't want you to do anything. They don't want you to do. It's irritating.
Well, Apple knows best.
Right? Yeah. But supposedly the new, the M1 chip, the laptops that have the new Apple M1 chip, they're supposed to be a lot better, at least processing power wise. But you're right, like the operating system hasn't changed basically in like the last 12 years.
Easily the last 12 years.
They've added like, you know, they'll make this big announcement, you know, we're bringing out these big updates to the Apple operating system. And it's just one little teeny tiny thing. Like, oh, we rounded the corners on this.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
That's not an update. No one's even going to notice that.
And even if they say it's faster, at some point you'll have enough stuff on there to where it'll bog down. Right. And of course they're going to blame, well, you've had it for 2 years. Well, right. When I first bought it, it was supposed to be the fastest thing out there. And it's still now is just as fast as my old computer mm-hmm. that I overpaid for.
Yeah.
And traded in for
my current laptop. I've already had to send it in to get stuff replaced on it. And it's a 2020. I got it in 2020. My other one crashed for the third time. And it was going to be $700 to replace the logic board on it. So like, well, if we're going to spend $700, might as well get a new one. Oh, and gosh. So got a new one. And then, it was a month after, 1 month after the 1 year warranty, it wouldn't charge. Something happened on the logic board, so it wouldn't charge. So had to send it in. Fortunately, I bought it at Costco. And I had bought whatever warranty Costco had, but not the AppleCare. So sent it into Costco's place So I just have a bad track record with Macs. I've had hard drives crash and people say, well, a Mac hard drive never crashes.
Oh,
I've had hard drives crash. I've lost everything on a Mac hard drive.
Yeah.
Had to start from scratch and had more than one hard drive crash. So.
Pictures are the worst because so many of our pictures now mm-hmm. are digitized. You know, we don't print them out and put them in books like in the old, quote unquote, old days. And I've lost some kids' pictures when they were young that I just was like, oh, I wish I would have, you know, backed everything up in triplicate, you know, mm-hmm. so I would have those still. But it just forces you to be more in the moment so that mm-hmm. you can remember,
right?
You know, those times.
Yeah, but back in the day, you had the physical copy, right? So
yeah.
Unless something physically happened to it, you still had the copy, right?
Yeah, and it got passed on, yeah. Unless it got stuck in somebody's garage or storage unit somewhere and nobody knew where it was.
Right.
But yeah,
Times have changed. We're becoming those old guys that talk about how like the good old days and like things were just so much better when we were younger.
Oh, I love how things are now. I mean, you know, you talk about being a man to remember. I think for us, we fortunately have seen the progression of technology and the progression of humanity into all of these different technically phenomenal areas of knowledge and understanding and medicine and music and we've seen it all come about, and so we can appreciate the journey, you mm-hmm. know. So the people that are really old can't appreciate it because by the time it rolled around, they couldn't understand it anyway.
Right.
But we were the ones that were using it and building mm-hmm. it, so we can really enjoy and appreciate where we've come and mm-hmm. where we're going. I mean, I'm excited about the future.
How old were you when you first used a computer?
We got our first computer. It was a Radio Shack Tandy, and we were the last people, just like cable, to get one. I went to a school not in my neighborhood. We were really living in a economically challenged neighborhood, if you will. It was basically the Portland version of the ghetto, which Portland didn't have a ghetto, so to speak. But yeah, so we were the last person to get one, and we couldn't afford a desktop. And so we talked my dad into going to Radio Shack, and it took a lot of persuading. And we got a Tandy computer, which looked like an Atari type computer. It had the cassette cassette loaded games and stuff. And that was when Oregon Trail and all those were mm-hmm. big. And we were so glad to have just a computer, just to be able to say we had a computer mm-hmm. was a big, big deal. Although we were too embarrassed to say what kind of computer we had. What kind of computer do you have? Well, you know, it's a computer. You know, what kind do you have? You know, so, but that was our introduction into it. But I had friends that had really nice computers and being over their house and being able to interact with them. And they had mm-hmm. the faster modems. It went from 1500 baud, you know.
Well, I know it was 28 for a long time, and then 56 was 56. The big upgrade. Yeah.
Yeah. Huge upgrade. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was always like, oh, if you get this, it'll last you for 10 years. I mean, this technology is cutting edge.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah. And people don't even realize how slow 56K is. 56K. So like, you know, all of like everything that we do now is like at least 10 megabytes, if not like 100 or 300, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked and joked about how our internet out here at the farm was always bad. Now we've got Starlink, so we've got good internet.
Oh, nice.
But it would be literally with HughesNet, what we had before, you got 50 gigabytes of bandwidth per month. And that was supposed to be at 25 megabytes per second. It never was. It was only ever 1 megabyte per second.
Oh, my gosh.
And then when you went over 50 gigabytes, they would throttle you down to 28K. Not 56, not even like dial-up modem speed, but 28. So like you're literally unable to do hardly anything. So, yeah, that's...
How do they sell that? I mean, does the salesman come and say... Well, because you can't get anything else.
Yeah, there's
nothing. It's better than nothing. Yeah. Well, it's pretty much practically nothing. But keyword is practically,
right? And it was like $100 a month for that service. And
oh my goodness,
you know, we'll be watching TV, and this and the commercial for HughesNet will come on and said, you know, are you sick and tired of not being able to get high speed internet where you live? Well, not anymore. And I get every time, you liar, you're a liar. And now the kids call her a liar whenever she comes on because I've said it so many times.
But, oh yeah. My gosh. Yeah. That is.
Yeah. But we're in we're back in the 21st century again now because we've got Starlink and so we can stream shows. So now we got like 7 years of streaming to catch up on. So if you got any good recommendations, yeah, we got to get caught up.
Yeah.
Cause I've been getting caught up with Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. But even that's kind of like outdated now. You know, that was something people watched 4 or 5 years ago. That no one...
Well, and that's what's so great about the times we live in, right? Because you can say, I'm watching reruns of whatever, mm-hmm. MASH, right? Hee Haw.
Right.
But since it's on streaming and it's instant, people see it as, oh, just another show. Mm-hmm. They don't see it, oh, the show that came out in whatever year. They're just saying, oh, it's a show that's on Netflix.
Right.
And we don't care so much about when it came out. If it's a great show, it's a great show. And we absolutely love it. Like my kids discovered The Cosby Show when they were younger.
Oh, I love The Cosby Show.
Streaming.
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
I got to get my shoes. My feet are cold.
Keep talking. Yeah. So it was great because with streaming internet or the streaming, you know, Netflix and all the other streaming services, they didn't care about when it came out. It was just a good show. And my wife and I would throw a name out of a show we used to watch when we were kids. And they're like, oh, we're going to watch it. And mm-hmm. they would just watch it just like they're watching a show that's on at a certain time each night.
Mm-hmm.
But they were able to watch all of the episodes they wanted and binge right. and mm-hmm. watch it all at once. So I think that's what's really cool is that you no longer feel like, oh, you know, there's this great show on I used to watch when I was a kid. It's now like, oh, there's a great show on. I watched it at this point in my life, but you can watch it now.
Mm-hmm.
It there's no longer that divide.
Which is the other awesome. Night, I can't remember what was going on, but Harry and Harper, my two youngest, and I watched an episode of The Muppet Show.
Oh yeah,
which is on Disney Plus. So you can go back and watch those old episodes of The Muppets. I was like, it's still a pretty good show.
Yeah,
Like I think people would watch that show today. You know, if they did the Muppet Show today and just brought in new guests, you know, because they had one guest for every episode, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever watch the Muppet Show?
Oh, we always watched the Muppet Show. There were safe shows we could watch. My parents growing up were really sticklers about what we saw, and most mm-hmm. of the time, since there was only one TV in the house, it was what they wanted to watch.
Right.
You know, unless
that's what it was for us. Always. It was always what my parents wanted to watch. Yeah. Unless they weren't, if they weren't there, then we could watch other shows. But
yeah.
But when they were in the room, even if Dad was like reading a book, we couldn't change the channel to something else. So we watched Andy Griffith. We watched Matlock. We watched, mm-hmm. you know, I loved The Cosby Show. And then later came on, years later, was A Different World, the spinoff off of that. Yeah. So that was my favorite night. I think Full House ended up being on that night eventually, like Thursday night or something. It was the best night on TV. And then we would watch those shows. But yeah, it's just, it's a different world. Because, you know, one of the things that we're finding is that so much of the content you just can't watch, or at least I can't watch. Like, I'm not going to watch. I know a lot of people, a lot of a lot of guys are watching this stuff out there. We should do a whole podcast on that someday. But, you know, like, I'm going to pick on a show that I know probably a lot of people love, like Game of Thrones. Like, I've never seen an episode of it, but people talk about it. And like, other pastors will come up to me and talk about Game of Thrones. And, like, I'll give them this look like, you watch Game of Thrones? And this one pastor, like, they were so into it. They were like, it was coming up to the series finale, whenever that was. And they had, like, they
the
had
wedding
a,
or whatever.
Yeah, they had a betting pool on who was, like, who was going to die that week or something. Who was going to make it to the end? Because, like, I guess characters were dying off every week, and, like, they were seeing who was going. Like, you're that in? Like, you guys are that into the show? You're really watching? Like, you're watching Game of Thrones as a family?
Oh gosh! Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, but, I mean, so what is your understanding of the show? Since, you know, because I know what you're saying.
All I know is it's some old show like Vikings or something, some old, like, old people in different era.
Yeah.
And there's a, like a mob show or something, right?
It's, well, there's lots of blood and gore. There's also lots of sex and in that. And so it's not a show that, you know, espouses family values per se. You know, there's that element of, you know, family first type of, well, yes and no, because family members kill each other off.
Depending on if you like the family member.
Yeah, if you like the family member or not, right? But it's pretty bad. I saw, I didn't watch the full episode. I saw a couple portions of a couple episodes. I'm like, whoa. Yeah. It's definitely not a family show. And the thing is, there's so much to watch. Like, you know, we were just talking about when we grew up, you had to be sitting in your seat watching at a certain time, a certain channel watch a show.
I remember when we got a VCR. And even when we got a VCR, we didn't record that much. Like, we'd only record either a movie that we really wanted to watch and, you know, and watch it over again. Or we'd record dad's, you know, religious programming, basically, like Dr. D. James Kennedy on Sunday morning. And who else did, I can't remember who else we recorded, but
Jimmy Swired or?
No. We didn't watch Swired. Who else? I'll have to think about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we never, like, we had, I think, maybe a dozen VHS. And one of them was It's a Wonderful Life. So that's probably why that's my favorite movie, because it's one of the movies that we had that we could actually watch over and over again. It is a great movie.
Is a great movie. Yeah. And that's the thing, is that, like, there's so many great shows, great movies out, and you can watch any of them anytime. Mm-hmm. So I understand the faddishness about TV shows and movies, where it seems like everybody's watching, like, it's a social phenomena. But you still have to use common sense. You know, you got to use the wisdom that God's given you and you know, have some sort of, just be in tune with the Holy Spirit in terms of, is this feeding my soul? How's this benefiting me? How am I learning how to be a better person, a better example of Christ in what I'm putting into my ears and my mind?
Right.
And I tell you, if you binge watch some Game of Thrones, you're putting a bunch of stuff in your mind that, you know, may percolate and titillate you or whatever, but it's not in a good, good, wholesome way.
Yeah. I heard someone talk about it. The suitcase of the mind. You have to be careful what you put in your suitcase.
Yeah.
Cause it's going to be there for a very long time. Like, do you really want that in your suitcase for the rest of your life? Right.
Well, and if you go through the proverbial TSA with your suitcase and they dump everything out in front of everybody to see, are you going to be embarrassed about what's in that suitcase, right?
Yeah.
So
there's a rabbit hole we could go down.
Oh, what's that?
There's tech now in Japan for mind reading that they've been testing since 2016. And they can get the numbers 0 through 9 at a 90% accuracy, and the rest of the whole alphabet at like 60%. This was in 2016. So in 2016, they were able to put something on your head and you could think 1, 7, 6, 9, and the computer's reading it without you saying anything. And and they could get the alphabet up to 60%. 6 years ago, they were able to do this. So, like, you know, now, like, there's got to be things where they've already got devices out there where they can, you can just like put on, like you got the Oculus, but like you put on this mind thing and it's just like, you don't even have to talk anymore. You just think. And
yeah.
So you talk about suitcase of the mind, exactly what you were saying. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Do you really want that being accessible to Microsoft and Apple and all of these guys?
All those searches you would mentally do, even on accident, because if you there's some thoughts that pass through your mind.
Right.
But that's why the Bible speaks of taking every thought captive, is because if you let it stay there and it sort of ferments, then that's where you're going to having problems. And a lot of that enters your mind through what you're watching and listening to. Mm-hmm. So I'm good on you for the Game of Thrones thing. Cause you aren't going to be able to share that with a lot of people sometimes, especially people that struggle with, you know, pornography or struggle with any type of issues with sexual orientation or anything like that. Cause it's all up for grabs. And it's all their anger issues, whatever it is, abusive relationships, it's all there on Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And it's. So yeah, I love a lot of shows. And
again, we're watching just, now.
What's that?
Gilmore Girls.
Okay, now you swung the other way. It's a wholesome thing. As a guy, I can't get into it
myself. I'm not into it. That's something that my wife and her mother really got into when it was on, and you know, and it's been really, you know, a big show for Becky. And so, you know,
my daughter loves it.
It's not it's not horrible. I will say that. And I'm probably going to take flack for this because she listens to this podcast. It's not a bad show. I really like the writing of the show. It's really quick, and it's the kind of show where there's a lot of jokes written in really fast, you know. And so, you know, it's actually kind of fun to listen to that way. But it's not a real. It's an older school kind of a show, so it doesn't have a lot of change. Like the characters aren't really changing and metamorphosizing, you know, like becoming different,
maturing,
just kind of staying the same. It's kind of stagnation essentially. But that's how shows were back in the day, that you didn't need that in the shows. But I like shows now where the characters are growing and changing and developing. And
well, I mean, every show you learn something new, and if you don't apply it, I mean, you have your Friends and your Seinfelds where you know who those characters are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kramer's going to be Kramer and ridiculous. George is going to be over the top and high anxiety and irritable and loud and, you know, and then Jerry's. So you're right, that very formulaic shows. And now I like it just because they are more interesting in that they have all types of different approaches and different techniques they do. Like they'll go back in time to explain different parts of the person's upbringing.
Like This Is Us.
Yeah.
Like you watched This Is Us.
Yeah. I've seen This Is Us.
Yeah. Cause this is the last season, right? That's coming up to the series finale. And I've just been so impressed with the writing. Like it almost looks like they must have recorded like the whole series in a year or something. At the
same time, yeah.
Because it's just all like there's so much continuity among the characters and all the different ages. And you know, I'm really excited to see. And one of the things I really appreciate, I'm getting really nerdy here, but like I really appreciate that they decided in advance it was going to be 6 seasons, and they basically had it written out, outlined out. They knew what was going to happen. They had all the characters, they had everything kind of plotted out, and they said, you know, this is what it's going to be. We're not going to give in to the temptation to extend it beyond this because this is the story. And like, So the story is what's really important in a show like This Is Us, and they're going to stick with it, which almost never, because it's, you know, they're going to be finishing at a peak. I mean, like it's super popular, right? And the temptation would be, we can extend this thing to another. There's got to be more story here we could tell, but they're committed. this is the story. This is where we're finishing it. So I appreciate that.
It jumps the shark at some point, right? Unless mm-hmm. you go into their kids, you know, lives, sort of like a different world did for the Cosby mm-hmm. Show. It starts saying, okay, here are the kids going off to college, and right. here's their college experience. And but yeah, that's when it's done right. And a lot of it has to do with the writers and the directors and keeping all the same people in mm-hmm. place so that no one new comes in and says, oh, okay, we're going to change direction or change the style or mm-hmm. change the flow or change this person's opinion or attitude or personality. Just because I'm new here and I want to do things mm-hmm. different. It's that respect for the characters and the story
right.
throughout the show that keeps that integrity and yeah. keep people tuned in.
The story is important, and we could go there for a little bit. You know, story has a lot of power in our lives. We don't realize it. And I mean, we're obviously all living stories. We're living out a story of some kind. But you talk about getting some of this content in your mind and then letting that affect your, like, the narrative of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another reason to be careful about what you watch, because, like, I mean, do you really want to be, you know, even remotely living out the story that you're watching?
Yeah.
Because you do, right? It works its way, you know, if you watch a show like The Office, you start talking about it, you start making jokes about it, you start bringing in references up, you know, into your real life. So the story is obviously getting in your mind at a deeper level. Like, do you really want that to become how you're living your life? Do you want that to be an influence in the direction that you're going with your family, with your, you know, wife and spouse? You know, is that really?
Yeah. You start emulating.
Yeah.
You know, a character on a show, or saying, I like how they act, or I like the response they get with how they present themselves. And but to the point of the podcast too. You know, how do we as men tell stories that do impact the lives of those people around us, whether it's our kids or mm-hmm. our, you know, our congregants or our friends or community? That is an art form, I think, that has been lost to us as men. You know, it's not uncommon to hear people say, you know, my granddad used to say this, and he'd sit us down and tell mm-hmm. us stories, or my dad used to tell us stories. My dad in particular tell those stories mm-hmm. About growing up and things that he's experienced. And I think, okay, what stories am I sharing with my kids? Mm-hmm. And I think in our generation, a lot of us, we don't share a lot of those stories, right. or at least in a way that's memorable and meaning, and that has, you know, that has a finale that speaks to, okay, and this is what you should do moving forward based mm-hmm. on my experience or based on the lesson of this story, mm-hmm. right? We're just letting the kids take stories from TV and Netflix and all of that, and those are not good stories. Right. Now, This Is Us has some good stories mm-hmm. in it, but a lot of the stuff out there has no real relevance to our mm-hmm. real lives as far as how we can better ourselves right. and better our world, you know, by learning from the past.
Right.
And so for me, that's something that I'm really trying to be more intentional about mm-hmm. is the stories that I'm telling my kids and that legacy I'm leaving through those stories that they'll share with their kids and grandkids. I got to have some good stories for the grandkids,
right.
you know, being grandpa
right.
at some point in my
right,
life.
Yeah.
So,
So last week we talked about humor and the importance of humor, how important it is for men to be humorous. Like, and we mentioned a study, you know, it was kind of an informal study, but a surveyor who was studying, I can't remember what she was studying initially, but she just asked this classroom of students, who's the funniest person in your life? Mm-hmm. And 29 out of the 30 students said either their dad or their brother. Huh. And only one said their mom. You know, and so there's almost this hardwired expectation for dads to be funny. And
how old, when does this take, what year, how
I don't know, back? I want to say like third grade or something. The study?
Yeah.
How old, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of so many, you know, broken families and right. single parent homes where would you still hear the dad if the kids don't have that relationship, or would you more likely hear the mom, or would you hear an uncle? You know
what I
mean?
How times have changed. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just depends on where the study took right. place and who these kids were
right.
and, you know, their group that they mm-hmm. all come from. It sounds like if it's 29 out of 30, I don't know if.
Dad or a brother, so a guy brother. In their life.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So yeah. it was either one or the other. So yeah. it wasn't like 29. Okay.
Yeah. But humor is important, but storytelling was a very much, I think you said, a lost art. Mm-hmm. I mean, my grandfather, my dad can tell a pretty good story. I've actually studied and worked hard for years to learn how to do storytelling. So like there's books out there. If you want to become a good storyteller, there's a book called Long Story Short. Can't remember her name. I think it's Margot Lightman. Mm-hmm. So have you ever listened to The Moth on NPR?
No.
So there's a podcast. You can listen to the podcast version of it, but it's also on NPR. I don't know when it is. I just do the podcast. But it's just stories. They're just telling stories. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, they're just, you know, funny stories. But then other times, you know, stories about real issues.
What was the name of it again?
The Moth.
The Moth.
And they do, that's actually one of the things I want to try. They do storytelling competitions, and they have one in Portland. And so like, I want to work up a story and go over there and tell it in the competition someday. It's one of my dreams, and just, you know, see how I do as a storyteller. But I mean, storytelling competitions have been around for centuries. You know, it's been like, they're just been guys that are good at telling stories, and we just so don't appreciate telling a good story anymore. Yeah. So do you have a story? You have any stories you can tell?
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, I grew up in high school. I had the honor of having Mr. Ullman as my U.S. history teacher. And before every class, he played an episode of Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story.
I
love that class because every day we knew we were going to be able the first, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes or whatever, sit and listen to a great storyteller. Mm-hmm. Tell a great story about history.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way that was different than you would normally hear this story.
Right.
It starts from the beginning, not just from the point they enter as a hero into this space, but what experiences formed them into who they became.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very uplifting and inspiring for us as kids.
Mm-hmm.
Let me think. Do I have a story?
Do you know his story, Man and the Birds, the Christmas story?
No.
Paul Harvey? You have to look it up.
I'm going to look that one
up. We play it every Christmas. Been a Lindner family tradition. And actually, this last year, we played it at church, at our Christmas service, because it's such a great, it's a story. It's not a real story, I don't think. It might be. I guess it could be a real story.
What's the name of it again?
The Man and the Birds.
The Man and the Birds.
But great story. Yeah, great storyteller. You know, there's so many things about stories. One of the things, there's a book I read called, I'll remember it in a second. It's about neuroscience of storytelling, what happens in the brain with storytelling. Mm-hmm. And when you tell a story, the mind of the listener and the mind of the storyteller sync up. So like your brain waves start to line up. And it was like, it's incredible, you know, when you think about it, that you can just tell a story and get in sync with someone, you know? So, you know, it's such an important thing, you know, because you talk about having influence in someone's life, right? I mean, we're watching these stories and our brain waves are lining up with whatever story they're telling us. Mm-hmm. But it's an object essentially that's telling us this story. It's not another person. I mean, there are people on the screen, but we're watching the screen. But you talk about building relationships with other men.
Yeah.
And you've been there, right? Like you're sitting around a group of guys and you're telling stories, and then like there's that one up thing that has to happen, right? Have you ever experienced that?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Normally, it's always about, you know, what fish they caught.
Right. I'll tell a quick story. I use this when I'm talking about this topic, but growing up, I had one of those, the banana seat bikes. Do you remember those?
Oh, I had one, but it was my sister's bike. We couldn't afford a bike.
Oh, yeah. This was a girl's bike.
Yep. Flowers on the seat?
It was pink or purple. Sparkles. I can't remember. I think it probably used to have streamers that had probably worn off over time. It was not a.
It wasn't.
Yeah, but my dad definitely was not.
It was not cool.
But my dad got me from one of my birthdays, probably my 10th or 11th or something like that. You know, like BMX type bike, not a BMX, but I was used. But I wasn't familiar with riding that kind of a bike because the banana seat bike the brakes were on the pedals, right? You just pedal backwards and you hit the, that's how you hit the brakes, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm riding this bike, and I'm riding down the street, and I see one of the neighbors out, and I want to go show them my bike, so I'm riding up to their porch to show them my bike, and I go to hit the brakes, but there's no brakes there because the brakes are on the handlebars, right? Oh. So I run middle finger first into their porch and crushed my middle finger, and it instantly turned purple. And fell off, right? It fell off, you know, that night or the next day. And that's basically the first memory I have of riding that bike was riding it into the fence on the neighbor's front porch.
Oh my goodness.
So, but it's still, I mean, it was a lot better bike than the banana seat bike, but.
Yeah. But those banana seat bikes are comfortable.
Yeah.
Because those BMX seats, it's like going on one of those
cycles,
you know, those spin bicycles that you got to wear the right shorts for. We get the rashes and all that stuff, the chafing going mm-hmm. on. Yeah. But man, it's a good story. Wow. I always think, you know, because my dad being a pastor and everything, you hear a lot of stories from mm-hmm. the Bible and how they're presented, it's always so cut up. You know, it'll start with the beginning of the story,
mm-hmm.
and then you hear people pull and draw from that to mm-hmm. say, you know, this is what was happening, and this is what God was doing. They didn't see or understand it, and, you know, but I always envision myself as a good storyteller as far as reading stories,
mm-hmm.
Because my mom was so good at it. She was a second and third grade teacher, and when she read you a story, you felt it, you know, you, right. like you said, you connected and you mm-hmm. could imagine the people through my mom's voice and what they were feeling and how they were conveying the message and what they were saying. And it was always really amazing to me. But as stories for myself, there was one I have when I was younger, and a lot of my stories are because, you know, I had a hard time listening because I wanted to experience things. And so much of my life growing up was about what not to do. And it was all of these fences and, you know, posts around what not to do just so mm-hmm. we would stay safe. Cause mm-hmm. we lived in an environment where at any point, if we were in the wrong place at the wrong time, bad things could happen. Mm-hmm. So, but I wanted to live. I wanted to feel, you know, take some risk and know right. you were alive and not experience just sit in a corner. And I needed to experience some stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, they had told us at one point that we had a Safeway, and they had these Safeway baskets back when you could take them off the premises. Now I think they lock up if you go too far past right. the front door. So there were homeless people that would take them, or people would just take them with their groceries, take them home, mm-hmm. these Safeway baskets that you pushed. And so my mom had told us, don't play with those baskets. I'm like, what's a basket? So we used to take them and ram them into each other.
Right.
We didn't have a bunch of toys, so we would just make toys mm-hmm. and make games out of whatever was available, okay? And the baskets were there. So one day, and this was pre the Titanic, all right? This is pre the Titanic.
Pre the movie, the Titanic.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I guess not pre the Titanic. I'm not that old. And so my cousin had a basket, and we were playing ram the baskets mm-hmm. together and stuff. And then I was like, oh, you know what would be cool? Is if I got in the baskets, and we had done this before where we got in the baskets and pushed each other around,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to lean over the edge. Like I'm at the time I was thinking of like mm-hmm. one of the Bentley, you know, you have the Bentley icon on the front right. of that person, mm-hmm. man or woman, whatever it is, right. leaning yeah. forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I was leaning forward just like they do, like Leo DiCaprio mm-hmm. does in the Titanic, King of the World, that, mm-hmm. that pose. Their arms out, leaning over the edge of the front of the basket as he was pushing it. Well, he stopped pushing it. At some point, I don't know when, but I went head first over the end of the back, cracked my skull open. I get up and my head was hurting like a headache, right? But on top, I'm like, oh my gosh, I put my hand up there and I feel something cold dripping mm-hmm. down the mm-hmm. front of my nose. Like somebody's pouring water over your head. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'm sweating. And I look at my hand that was just on my head and it's covered in blood.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I'm freaking out because it could only be my blood, you right. know? So I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm bleeding
mm-hmm.
and it's so much blood. I have never seen that much right. blood coming from the head. I didn't realize the head is one of the places where if you bleed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this is science that I didn't know at my age, my humble age of, I think I was like 10. And so The first thing I think, though, is I'm afraid to tell my mom, because right. if I have to tell her, I'll have to tell her how right. I cracked my head.
So mom's going to know.
Mom's going to know. I'd rather run to somebody else's mom somewhere mm-hmm. and have her deal with it than my own mom. Right. Yeah. Well, my mom was in the house and heard the screaming and everybody yeah. freaking out because they're looking at me with blood coming down my face. Mm-hmm. And of course, she comes out. And of course, while she's, you know, dealing with my head and putting alcohol on it and all types of, you know, the peroxide yep. and all that stuff mm-hmm. on it to try to, you know, make sure there's no type of infection. Mm-hmm. And cleaning it out, she's telling me, I told you so. I told mm-hmm. you so. You know, I heard that a lot in my life. I told you so. That should be the theme of my life story.
I told you.
That would be
I told you what was going to happen. I told you not
to. Title of my biography is I told you so. yeah. And my whole life flashed before me. If I'm sitting in this chair while she's tending to my head, I literally saw, and I was only 10, so it wasn't much to see, but I saw different segments of my life that you don't even realize you remember. But places you've gone, little pictures and shots of things you've experienced in your life. And I'm like, this is it. This mm-hmm. is what death looks like. You're seeing your life before your eyes,
right?
Literally. And yeah. now I know what it means when it says flash, because it's like right. flashcards. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know if have you ever experienced that in your life? Oh my gosh. It's something. Cause at our age, especially now, literally you'll see stuff from when you were a child, little flashes, like little gifts, if you will.
No, I see stars when I sneeze and cough sometimes, but I've never had anything flash before my eyes.
Yeah, no, well, it's very different than the stars, my friend. Very different.
No, there's actually a study. They just did a study. Someone was telling me a couple weeks ago about that they were a guy who was in a study with the stuff on his head to measure his, you know, brain waves or something. And he was at home. So it was one of those things, you know, you put the sensors on and then you go home and you do all the stuff. And, but he was at home, he had a heart attack and he died. So, but it's like one of the first times where they were able to capture what goes on in someone's mind when all this stuff is happening, and they could actually see in the data the different parts of the brain lighting
up. Firing up.
Where he's, yeah. when his life is flashing before his eyes. Like they've seen all the memories and stuff. And it's like, wow. So the article was saying it actually poses some questions about organ donation, because they would say, well, he's brain dead. So we're going to donate his organs. But the different kind of, there was an activity they hadn't, you know, been looking for, but now they're seeing it because of this guy. And so like, are we able to actually take someone's organs out when they're in that state, because they're aware. mm-hmm. Yeah. And so like, yeah, that's why I still have on my donor card, I'm not a donor.
You want them to,
I'm not a
donor. In your life. Well, especially with all the technology, mm-hmm. you're right. There are people who can be brought back mm-hmm. to life, especially nowadays. It happens more and more. They can put you on, you know, my wife's father, you know, when he was in the hospital, they cool his body down to, you know, it wasn't below freezing, but to a level where his heart and the rest of his organs didn't have to work as hard, because mm-hmm. they were artificially, you know, keeping him right, going until right. his heart was strong enough to mm-hmm. be for himself. So, yeah, you know, if you put that, you know, put yourself down to be a donor, just know that they may knock you over the head if you start coming to at some point. It's like, oh, nope, we already sold your organs.
I've watched enough medical shows where, like, you get that doctor that's desperate, you know, to save their patient, and they're like, no, we got to take his organs now. And then I'm like, no, I don't want to be in that situation. I don't want my family to be in that situation. But
yes.
No. Stories are good. I think there's a lot of things. I think we could... And there's, I think a lot of guys don't think about it when you put them on the spot to tell a story, they get all, you know, tense. But I think we're just natural storytellers, and women too. I think everyone is a natural storyteller, because we're living in a story. So we can think back to moments in our lives and we can retell the event, which is essentially what a story is, right? You're retelling something that happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, being able to share your story or your stories with people, and then letting them, helping them learn from your example. The unfortunate thing is you can't always, people, even if you tell a great story, they don't always want to listen to your advice.
Yeah.
But I do honestly believe a story has a better shot than a sermon at helping somebody, you know, avoid, you know, a life changing thing, you know, going down a road they shouldn't go down. If you can tell a good story that can help them keep from going down that road, you're probably going to do a lot better than if you lecture them, which is, I mean, I'm a pastor, so that's kind of my lectures come pretty easily to me, but
yeah. And it's so important, I think, too, for those stories to be your own, mm-hmm. you know, reflections of your own life, mm-hmm. Because to be able to create bonds and connections with people and empathy and the ability to relate to people, you have to have walked not the exact same path, but a similar path. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I know, you know, if I wouldn't have gone through some of the things that I went through growing up, if I would have just stayed in the bubble and never, you know, been inquisitive and gone out and wanted to, you know, not challenge my parents, but just to live a little, I wouldn't have as many stories. My stories would be, yes, I grew up, I sat at home, I went to school, I went to church, I learned these stories from the Bible. Mm-hmm. But then when you get with people that have had rough lives, been through war, mm-hmm. been addicted to drugs, been through divorce, mm-hmm. been abused, there's a gap there, mm-hmm. a chasm. But I can relate to people in those situations because I know what it's like to do things that are not in my own best interest, knowingly that aren't in my own best interest, but just to want to see what it's like. I mean, we always think we can get away with whatever it is we're doing. Mm-hmm. All of us have sped in our cars going faster than the limit, right? Mm-hmm. You know, all of us may have done a rolling stop at some point in our lives, right? You know what I'm saying? None of us are perfect.
Right.
And we have to be able to have, I think, those stories that allow us to relate to people. It may not be exactly identical to what they've been through, but that allow us to see to have a shared humanity. Mm-hmm. And as Christians, I think we can do that better, and we can do our kids more justice if mm-hmm. we help to say, hey, not everybody has been it's fortunate mm-hmm. to live in a place where you've got lots of space to run and play and to create games that are wholesome games. And mm-hmm. maybe you'll get you muddy or skinned up a little bit, but you're not running outside and joining a gang or mm-hmm. running outside and having to do things to compromise yourself to try to fit in or to find acceptance with people your own age. That's a different reality for mm-hmm. a lot of folks, but to have something in your life, a story that you can tell that is similar in that, you know, I had to go out and do something that compromised who I was to be able to fit in and feel accepted. So I know how that can be. Now you don't mm-hmm. have to tell them right after they tell you their story. Try to one up, like you said, the right. one-upmanship. Yeah. It's not, oh, yeah. you think that's bad. Well, one mm-hmm. time my mom told me not to cross the street and I did. So I get your story about being abused by your dad. Yeah. Right. No, it's not apples to apples. But again, having that ability to find grace through each other's stories mm-hmm. and have that empathy and the ability to relate is important.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. Making it practical, you know, cause I'm sure guys are listening and saying, yeah, well it's nice here. You guys can tell stories. I just can't tell stories. I can't remember what happened when I was young. And I used to think that, like, I used to think I didn't have a good memory at all, but I noticed once I started just trying to remember, mm-hmm. So like there's a chance because, you know, when I told the bike story, you remembered something about your growing up about, you know, having a similar bike. And so that brought up something in your mind.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you hear someone else telling a story, it sparks a story in your mind because that's how the brain works. So like it's looking to make a connection of some kind with what you're hearing mm-hmm. and what you've experienced in your life. And so what I do is I just write it down. Like, and when I'm listening to, I listen to a lot of comedians. When I'm listening to comedians and something they're saying reminds me of a story, I write it down. You know, I just have been slowly collecting for years, you know, my own stories from my own life. And then you get to a point where then you can start thinking back because you've actually started making all these connections. Like, oh, now, yeah, well, yeah, that happened. And now, because I remember that, now I remember that. Because I remember that, now I remember this.
I love it.
And so, like,
I'm you can start doing that.
Yeah. And it's a really easy practice. I was trying to do it every day, trying to remember one thing a day about, you know, growing up or something yeah. in my past. And I haven't done it quite that, but probably two or three times a week, I'll remember something or I hear something or trigger something, I just go write it down. And then I try to bullet it out, you know, write bullet points of the events as best I remember them. And then I try to tell the story at some point.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think telling the story, you just remember even more of the details as you're telling the story, because your brain is bringing it back to life as you're telling that story. And so, but lots of power there.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I'm going to start doing that. I think it's important. My dad just finished. In fact, we were over his house. He's been writing his bits and pieces from his life. Just to be able to have for all of us, his kids and grandkids, mm-hmm. And leave that legacy for us. And it's mm-hmm. been really interesting to see and hear those stories, as he's sharing more and more of them, because growing up, you know, he didn't really go through all of the stories of his life, mm-hmm. and it really humanizes him,
right.
I think. And it allows us to see him as someone that's just not, you know, Mr. Perfect. You know, when you're PK, you have to be on your P's and Q's, right. at all times, because you are the role model mm-hmm. for the church and for mm-hmm. your family and for, you know, you represent so many people just walking the earth.
Right.
And so you carry a heavy weight as mm-hmm. a PK. And you think your parents can, you know, do no wrong. They're mm-hmm. these perfect people, but to hear the stories now, it helps you to be able to relate in a whole different way. And mm-hmm. I really wish a lot of those we would have heard earlier, because kids are going to make those same decisions. Like, I don't think you're going to totally keep them from all harm by telling them, you know, one or two different stories. They'll still go on, some of them, and you know, want to experience things mm-hmm. and do make mistakes on their own. Right. Cause they'll think that you got caught or this, mm-hmm. you got hurt, but I'm not gonna hurt, you know,
right.
I'm different. Mm-hmm. We're always different. But it humanizes you.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the idea of writing it down. And I think for a lot of guys, we can remember, mm-hmm. I think, you know, there may be some really traumatic things in our life that our mind, you know, hides or blotches out. But for the most part, there's, as you're saying, as we talk to each other and have conversations with each other, and that's part of it, is talking to people mm-hmm. and hearing other people's stories. So it's a listening thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start listening, it'll stir your mind and stir up some of those past experiences to where you can't talk. Maybe you have to start listening more instead of talking, not you personally, but instead of talking,
right? Yeah.
And talking about current events, well, tell me a little bit about yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's always the hardest question when I was hiring people. Tell me about yourself. Mm. Well, I'm not working right now. I'm like, oh, no. Oh, really? I hope not, because you're here for an interview.
Shocking. Surprising information.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just revelations I couldn't have even fathomed when I walk in the room that you're telling me here. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but listening more, mm-hmm. and that will stir up stories and memories that will allow you to have something valuable to say mm-hmm. and to share when you do speak.
Mm-hmm.
My mom had a great saying. She used to say, it's better to keep your mouth closed and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And I think that needs to be repeated more nowadays than ever before, because mm-hmm. a lot of people are opening their mouths and they have right. either nothing to say, or what they're saying hasn't been very well vetted by
right.
common sense and
right.
factual knowledge. Right. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you. It's we're out of time already.
Oh, no.
But thanks for joining me on this episode. We'll have to have you back. We'll have to have some yeah. other conversations. Have you make you one of those recurring guests that just comes back every now and again and talk about some other fun topics. And
I'd be happy yeah. to. This studio, or a studio maybe closer to my house. Yeah. I don't know.
The one at the church is about 45 minutes closer.
There you
closer,
go. So. That, yeah.
yeah.
Studio C.
Or if we're coming down to your house sometime, I can bring some equipment down.
We yes.
can,
yeah.
Or we can use your stuff and...
Well, and my stuff is on, it's loaned out right now
oh, okay.
to the chief of police, who's going to be doing some podcasting. Yeah. So I loaned out my stuff. But now I know that this stuff is so affordable. Maybe yeah. at some point I can yeah. acquire some more gear. This is phenomenal. But honored. Thank you yeah. so much for
my
having
pleasure.
Me.
My pleasure. We're honored to have you. So.
Yeah.
All right. So you can find us online, mantheyremember.com, facebook.com/mantheyremember. Instagram.com/manthatremember. You can call 360-798-1457. Leave a message there and I'll get that. If you call during the week, I might even answer it. So, and then the best thing to us is if you just tell someone else about the podcast. That's the best thing. Second best thing is leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app or leaving a rating. But we really appreciate all those things you do. But thanks for listening. Until next time, have a great week. Thank you for listening to the Man They Remember podcast. You can find us online at www.mantheyremember.com, facebook.com/mantheyremember, and instagram.com/mantheyremember. Thanks for leaving a review and your rating on Apple Podcasts. And most importantly, thanks for sharing this podcast with your friends.